If the whole is partaken of by part wholly, then that whole is at many places because the parts are at many places. That would mean that the whole, which is one thing, is at many places. So that seems to be absurd. It may be absurd, ultimately you find it is not absurd. But at least it seems that it gives you an idea that one thing can be at many places, which seems to be contradictory of our ordinary ideas. We know that one thing is always at one place. You can't be, Pani can't be sitting here and at the garden at the same time. She is at one place. So, usually one thing is at one place. But if a part is taken off, partakes of the whole of idea, and since there are many parts, then that whole, which is one, is at many places. And that seems to be opposed to our ordinary idea. Therefore, it is absurd. That is one consequence. The other alternative is, there is B. That is, we have seen the consequence of this. The whole of the idea, then the same thing will be at many places. This is one consequence. If a part partakes only of a part of the idea, if a part partakes only of a part of the idea, then it means that the whole is divisible. And the whole is divisible. And according to Plato, whole is not divisible. It's a part of the theory of ideas. Ideas are indivisible, they are not divisible. So if a part partakes only of a part of the idea, then whole is divisible. And then an example is given by Parmenides. Supposing there is an idea of smallness. This is an idea of cattiness. He takes the example of smallness. Supposing there is an idea of smallness. Now smallness makes... Now if a small thing partakes of a part of smallness, a small thing partakes of a part of the smallness, then that small, that part, will be smaller than smallness. It is absurd. This is the dilemma. Since Socrates could not answer these questions, Parmenides dismissed him and said, your theory of idea is one bone for... We should repeat again this argument. The argument is, does a part partake of the whole idea or of a part of the idea? If it partakes of the whole of idea, then the same thing will be at many places, which is absurd. If it partakes only of a part of the idea, then idea is divisible, which is contradictory of Plato's theory of indivisibility of ideas. And taking an example of smallness, if a small thing partakes of a small part of our idea of smallness, then that small will be smaller than smallness, which is absurd. Alright, therefore Plato's theory of ideas is bombarded. You are not tired with this argument? Right? We can continue? Good. Don't feel tired. In philosophy, one quality is not to be tired. Don't even say it is useless. Very often, when you hear the arguments of philosophers, you say, oh, uselessly they go on asking and discussing. That's a misconception. Philosophers do not discuss useless things. They are very important. They may be wrong, but not useless. Some people might say, what is this nonsense you are talking, small than smaller and all this, and nonsense, divisible and indivisible. These are not nonsensical ideas. They are very important. So bear with these seeming nonsensical things. Bear with them, go through them, and then ultimately, when you grasp, you find a great perception, like the sun emerging, as it were, from the night. So we read again these two sentences. He said, still in philosophy, you should read again and again. When I used to read philosophy, I used to take 2 hours to read one paragraph. If you really want to study philosophy, do not worry about the time. I should take 2 hours to read one paragraph. Particularly when I was reading a philosopher called Spinoza, his arguments used to be so subtle, that it took time for me to understand his argument and the force of the argument. So it takes time, so it doesn't matter. We need to read again and again so that we at least grasp what he says. Read again. The first argument relates to this question, whether the particular partakes of the whole idea or only a part. It is argued that if it is the former, one thing is at many places at once. If the latter, the idea is divisible. And a thing which is a part of smallness will be smaller than absolute smallness, which is absurd. Now we come to the second argument. The second argument is the same as Aristotle's argument of the third man. You know, Aristotle was a pupil of Plato. And although he was a pupil of Plato, he did not agree with his master. So he argued against his own master. And that argument is called the argument of the third man. But this argument was already anticipated by Plato himself. It is not as if Aristotle discovered this argument. He only emphasized the argument of Plato, his own argument against his own theory. This argument is called the argument of the third man. Now let us see how it is. It states that since there is similarity between the thing and the idea of which it partakes, there must still be another idea to explain the similarity. And if there is such another idea, there will be similarity between these two to explain this similarity between the two. To explain these two, to explain which, there will be the need to posit a still further idea and ad infinitum. Just read once or twice. It's a very important argument. I'll read once without explaining first. Let us read again. Since it states that since there is similarity between the thing and the idea of which it partakes, there must still be another idea to explain this similarity. And if there is such another idea, there will be similarity between these two. To explain this similarity between the two, and then to explain these two, to explain which, there will be the need to posit a still further idea and ad infinitum. In philosophy, whenever any argument ends with ad infinitum, it means the argument is therefore, the basic argument is defeated. It is called the argument of endless regress. You go on, it is argument of endless regress. You go behind and behind and behind and behind. If it comes to an end, the argument is complete. But if it is endless regress, it is the argument. It never ends, and therefore the argument is never made. Argument is made when the argument is complete. But if the argument continues on and on and on and on and on and on and on, and you know that it never gets completed, then the argument doesn't exist. It never completes. An argument which is not complete is not an argument. So this argument is called an argument of endless regress. Now let us repeat the argument. There is a cat and there is a cat. You call both of them cats because they are similar to each other. Now if they are similar to each other, it is because, according to Plato, there is an idea called cattiness which explains the similarity. This is Plato's theory, that if one cat resembles another cat, then this similarity is because both the cats partake of cattiness. Fine. Now the question is there a similarity between cat and cattiness? There must be similarity between cat and cattiness. Now this similarity is because of what? There must be another kind of cattiness which is similar to these two. Now, if there is similarity between this cattiness and this cattiness, there must be. Therefore, there must be another cattiness. And ad infinitum. If Dipti and Kirit are similar to each other, there must be somebody who explains the similarity. But then, that one will be similar to Dipti and also similar to me. How do we explain this similarity between me and that third one? That is our third argument, third man's argument. So my similarity with that third man has to be explained. For that you require a fourth man. Then there will be similarity between that fourth man and the third man. This can be explained only if there is a fifth man. Then there is similarity between fifth man and the fourth man. That similarity can be explained only if there is a sixth man. It will never end. Therefore, argument is absurd. For the whole theory of ideas is absurd. And mind you, Plato himself is arguing this. His own theory of ideas, he is putting himself these arguments. Clear this idea? This third man argument? Let us repeat. If there are two cats, they are both called cats because they are similar to each other. By virtue of what are they similar to each other? By virtue of cattiness. If so, then there is again a similarity between cattiness and the cat. How do you explain this similarity? There must be another kind of cattiness which explains this similarity. Then the similarity between their cattiness and their earlier cattiness. And how do you explain the similarity between them? There must be a further cattiness, and so on. It will never end. And when the argument does not end, the argument is not made. It doesn't complete itself. Therefore, according to this argument, the theory of ideas false. It's not valid. There is a third argument. There is still a third argument which points out that since everything in the world has a corresponding idea, there must be ideas corresponding to hair, mud, and dirt as well. An argument which is rejected not only on any rational ground, but only with indignation. If everything in the world has a corresponding idea, then hair also must be a corresponding idea. There must be hairiness somewhere. If dirt exists, there must be somewhere like dirtness. There must be muddiness somewhere. And Parmenides says, oh, this is absurd. There is no rational argument, but it is absurd. This is the third argument. Now comes the final argument. According to a further argument, if ideas are thoughts, thoughts must be of something, and therefore they cannot be ultimate. If ideas are thoughts, and thoughts are always of something, then that something must be ultimate, not ideas. Therefore, Plato's argument that the ideas are ultimate is rejected. Now, to grasp this argument, we must understand what is the meaning of ultimate. According to Plato, ideas are ultimate. Or rather, to be very fair to him, he said that ideas are penultimate. There's a difference between ultimate and penultimate. Penultimate is not absolutely ultimate, but lower than ultimate. So according to Plato, there are many ideas which are penultimate. But these ideas can be three ultimate ideas. So ideas, there are many ideas, number of ideas. These ideas are truth, beauty and goodness. Ultimately, all the ideas put together can be under three categories. Truth, beauty and goodness. And these again can be combined into one idea, the good. And this good, the good, is ultimate. So this statement is not exactly correct. The most correct idea is ideas are penultimate, but the idea of the good is ultimate. This is Plato's theory. Ideas are penultimate, but idea of the good is ultimate. And what is the meaning of the ultimate? It is the highest that can be conceived. The highest that it can be conceived is ultimate. Beyond which there is nothing. You want a holiday tomorrow. how will you get the permission to be to a holiday tomorrow? The Dipti is the ultimate authority to decide whether you should have holiday or not. Supposing she says, no, you will not have holiday, but you want a holiday. Then you begin to ask, is there anybody higher than Dipti to whom we can go? So you go on to higher and higher and higher and higher. And then you say, now that is the highest. As in the case of a court case, you go to a court, then you go to a district court, which is a higher court, then you go to high court, which is a still higher court, and then you go to Supreme Court. And once the Supreme Court says something, final, ultimate, there is nothing higher than that. So ultimate is beyond which there is nothing. It is the highest. Now, the argument is that if the idea of the group is ultimate, the argument says this proposition is wrong. This is the argument. What is the argument? Idea is a thought. Idea is a thought. Now, important point is that every thought is always a thought of something. You examine any thought, thought is always of something. Therefore, thought points to something beyond itself. Therefore, thought can never be ultimate. Therefore, idea of the good is not ultimate. So Plato's theory, which says that idea of the good is ultimate, is rejected. There are still some more arguments, which however are not so important. These four arguments are important arguments. Let's repeat these four arguments. The first argument is, does the part partake of the whole of the whole idea, or only of the part of the idea? You got it? You want something? No? That was the first argument. If it partakes of the whole, then the whole is at many places. This is itself. If it partakes of the part of the idea, then the whole is divisible, which is contrary to the idea of Plato. And if there is an idea of smallness, then a thing which is small will be smaller than smallness, which is absurd. It's the first argument. The second argument is that the theory of idea rests upon similarity between particulars. If one thing is similar to the other, then that similarity is explained by an idea. But then there is a similarity between particular and the universal, to explain which you have to have another idea. And then there will be a similarity between one universal and the other universal. Therefore there is another universal. That universal will be similar to the other previous universal. Therefore, you need another universal, and this ad infinitum. Therefore, the argument falls. The third argument is that if everything in the world has a corresponding idea, then there must be an idea of the hair, idea of mud, idea of dirt, which is a thing. And the fourth argument is, ideas are thoughts. And thoughts are always of something, therefore thoughts can never be ultimate. Therefore ideas are not ultimate. These are the four arguments on the basis of which Plato's theory of ideas is rejected by Plato himself. And that is important. Plato himself rejects his own theory by his own arguments. Alright, we shall continue this tomorrow. And yet Plato's theory, he holds his theory up to the end. Even after rejection, he does not give up the theory. That is very important also. He rejects his own theory by his own arguments, and yet he holds his theory. Alright, we shall repeat the four arguments tomorrow. So try to remember it. Even if you don't remember, don't worry. We shall do it again, all over again. I never burden the mind of the student. We shall repeat it again.